there. They're all living the devil may care. Well, I'm just a devil with a lot of despair. So viva Las Vegas, viva.
Thank you, Wayne Newton, for that fabulous intro. This is John Katzlamitas, and you're listening to Cats with the Dish. I write the Cats Report on LasVegasSun.com. Las Vegas Sun, I write for all the titles in Greenspun Media Group. Joining me, as always, is the ever-vibrant and vivacious Trish McCrone. Trish, how you doing?
Hi, I'm good. I am...
I was backward in that intro, wasn't I?
Yeah, that's okay. I you know, I'm kind of just so used to it that I'm like, you have so many credits.
I wasn't
you
even
do
the credit.
So much.
I was just reversed. I do a lot.
I know. You're a very busy guy. And here I am. But I'm about to get hot in Cleveland next week.
Yeah, what's happening in Cleveland? What are you doing back there?
I was still my family. I haven't been back there since my sister's funeral 4 years ago. So I'm going to go back, and I have some family stuff that I'm going to do and see some old friends. And so I'm usually disappear in the Montana Bureau, but I'm going to be in the Cleveland Bureau, but we may have a repeat, or you may do it solo.
We don't know yet.
Which, you know, that sounded really bad. As I said it, you may do it solo.
I thought we were talking about the show.
But something else that is very interesting this week is you have one of our former guests very, very upset with you, Cats.
Anthony Coles is mad at me. Yeah, you know, he's mad at me because...
We went to the anniversary show.
We went to his anniversary show, and he brought up somebody...
Which we were very excited that we went.
Yeah, I wanted to go see him.
Yeah, I wanted to support him.
And I do give Anthony credit, and I will give anybody credit for sustaining a show for 20 years in Las Vegas.
Yes, absolutely.
That is no small feat. And so we went to his anniversary performance, which was media and VIP and friends and stuff... came. It wasn't a regular ticketed show at the Paris where he headlines. And at the beginning of the portion of the show when he brings up volunteers, he brought up somebody who looked very familiar to me. And it's an old woman who took her seat on stage. And I remembered her from the only other time I've seen Anthony's show 2 years ago.
Before he was coming on the show, you went to see the show.
Yes. Yeah. And that was the purpose of the seeing the show, was to do research for him to be a guest on the show. So anyway, this woman... was on the stage again 2 years later in a show that...
Yeah, it's kind of like when you... Because it's audience. It is
audience participation show.
Audience participation. And people who have never been hypnotized are supposed to... people that just get up there and they...
Let it fly.
Yeah.
Right.
And some people that we do know did volunteer that day.
Yes. We had at least... There were a couple... At least one person I knew pretty well ended up not being held over, and one of the 11 or so people who took part in the show. Anyway, it turns out that this woman has been in his show and on his stage about 40 times over the years. She's a huge fan from North Carolina. And I thought this was very unusual for a show that professes to be all about spontaneous activity among its audience members. He told me in text that he invited her to the show because he knew that the people in the audience would not be willing to be brought on stage.
Because it was an industry
volunteer.
Crowd. Yeah, and we're absolutely right.
Which
I would
right
never
about,
volunteer. Yeah,
which I wasn't going to go up there. And so the woman did the same behavior she did 2 years ago. She did a bit where she takes her dentures out and performs a certain act and stuffs socks down the front of her pants. The same thing happened 2 years apart. So I wrote it. You know, and the fact that he invited her to the show and brought her on stage to make sure that the show was going to play out in a certain way. And he didn't like that. He didn't like me pointing that out. He thought I was focusing on the negative of the show. He thought that I should have been writing more about the people who really enjoyed the show and how funny it was. And so we're sort of at impasse there. But I stand by the fact that if you're presenting a show in one way and it plays out in a different way and you're stacking the volunteers on stage, that's sort of newsworthy.
But what I don't understand is, was she actually hypnotized? Like,
no.
does the same... No, but you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like you can volunteer to be hypnotized, and every time you're getting hypnotized.
That raises the question, and I think that... I don't know that you can be hypnotized and perform the exact same behaviors.
I don't know that either.
In two or three...
Very...
I feel that the answer is probably not. But anyway...
Yeah, I can find that out. But it caused a... kerfuffle or something.
A little bit of a kerfuffle.
Is that a word?
It is
wow,
a word.
Wow, I'm really impressed that you used it.
Appropriately assigned.
Wow, oh my gosh, that is what is the most amazing thing on the planet.
Had a little dust up and, and I will give, in general, generally speaking, I give credit where it's due. I like great live entertainment. I support the shows that are great in this city. Okay, coming up next, First is Josh Bell with movies, and then after that is one of our one of the great artists in the cities, one of the great men you'll find anywhere, Jerry Lopez of Santa Fe and the Fat City Horns. They have a new album out called The Answer, and he's going to be talking about that and their gig and him his health and other topics. So stick around. I know we will.
This is Felice Garcia with Million Dollar Quartet, and you're listening to Cats with the Dish.
This alpha predator of yours, Doctor, do you really think he has a chance?
The arrogance of man is thinking nature is in our control, and not the other way around.
That's David Strathairn and Ken Watanabe as two of the disposable human characters in Godzilla. I'm Josh Bell, film critic for Las Vegas Weekly, with a look at what's new in theaters this week. The giant lizard takes second billing as a villain behind two deadly creatures known as Mutos in director Gareth Edwards' reimagining of the classic Japanese monster movie. None of the human characters is compelling enough to compete with the giant monsters, but luckily, Edwards knows how to make those monsters fascinating. The movie's topical resonance is a bit superficial as well, but it does impart some seriousness to what is at heart a rather silly story about rampaging beasts. Those beasts are what really matter, though, and this movie mostly does them justice. I give Godzilla 3 stars out of 5. Also opening this week is Million Dollar Arm, starring John Hamm as a sports agent who goes to India in search of new baseball talent.
We can deliver to Major League Baseball its first Indian ball player. That's 1 billion new fans. What do 1 billion new fans need? 1 billion hats? 1 billion t-shirts?
Based on a true story, Million Dollar Arm is split into two halves, with sports agent J.B. Bernstein first traveling to India to find new baseball superstars, and then those prospects traveling to the U.S. to train for a major league tryout. The laid-back travelogue of the first half is much stronger than the second half, which focuses on predictable sentimentality. In its efforts to inspire, the true story eventually comes off as phony. I give Million Dollar Arm 2.5 stars out of 5. That's a look at what's new in theaters this week. Check out my reviews in Las Vegas Weekly and my blog at joshbellhateseverything.com.
Welcome back. Sitting with us now is one of the most respected and best-liked artists in this city. He's the founder of Santa Fe and the Fat City Horns, a band whose career in Las Vegas dates to the days of the Mint Hotel in 1975. The band still plays regularly at the Lounge of the Palms on Monday nights at 10:30 and has just released a new album titled The Answer, a new long play vinyl album. Welcome back to Cats of the Dish, Jerry Lopez.
Yay!
Thanks for having me, John.
How you doing, brother?
I'm doing good.
I'll bet you are. Yeah. We have the answer here. I have a bootleg copy of such.
Yep. It's almost out. Songs. That's the pre-released bootleg copy right there.
It's an extreme bootleg.
Yeah.
But we have your permission here on the radio. Okay.
It's not a bootleg then, right?
If you have the artist's permission. No, I'm just going to say, you know, well, no, it is. It's a pre-release.
That's right.
I like that.
I like the covert bootlegness of it better.
Cats put up his cell phone in the show Monday night, and I think that's what happened.
My audio cassette recorder. So this album, Jer, has been in progress, in development for about 3 years, right?
Yeah.
When did you guys start this?
Almost 3 years. Wow. Well, we released our last one in 2009 or 2010, I think.
Right.
Right after that, we started writing stuff for this one. You know, right away we get to work on whatever we're already moving on.
So, who decides when you're going to start writing for an album? And this is a 16-piece band, and everybody pretty much can write in it.
And what'll happen as soon as this one's out, I mean, like officially out, we'll all start going, well, let's start working on the next one. And, you know,
another 3 years.
Yeah.
Down the road,
and a lot of times, you know, I mean, with me anyway, I don't know how it is with Dave Richardson or Nathan Tenoy or Jamie or the other guys, but a lot of times, a lot of the stuff that ended up on this CD, for example, came from what I call kernels. They're little pieces of ideas that I've written over the years.
Mm-hmm.
I may sit and get an idea like in the middle of the night and I'll just record it. You know, it might be a hook, it might be a lick, it might be something. And I have folders and folders of those on my hard drive. And so then when I'm getting ready to produce something or write something, the first thing I do is I go through a whole listening session where I listen to all that stuff and I may find something and go, I really mm-hmm. need to develop that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then, you know, then I sit down and start working on it.
Dude, things, I've heard this with a lot of, whether it's writers, musicians, anything, that a lot of times they're the type of people, I guess now, technologically speaking, that you could use your phone or you could use other things. But does inspiration come to you a lot of times, like when you're sleeping or in the middle of the night and you just wake up and then?
Yeah, but I've got technology right at my fingertips.
Even so it's when right I wake next up. To you at all
oh,
times.
Yeah. Yeah, that happens with a lot of people.
Yeah.
I mean, lyrics and song ideas and things come to you in dreams. And there are times when I like jump up out of bed and I'm just, you know, you ever have one of those dreams that was so cool you're really
you
struggling
wish you
to
could record
exactly,
it.
Exactly. And mm-hmm. you're trying to remember it or at least recount it to somebody so it doesn't go away.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with songs.
It's funny, you know, like with straight writing without music, that has happened to me where a sentence or a paragraph will hit me at one point, and I say, I've got to work that in somewhere. This right. is an odd phrase. You know, yeah. you almost want to write it down right at that moment.
Right.
You know, it's a subconscious.
You don't want it to get away.
Uh-huh.
You know,
uh-huh.
and
it's because the mind process. Yeah.
Sure.
So now let's say one of the other guys, let's say whether it's Tony or somebody, that they have written a song. Is there any way that they just come with a fully written song and just like, here, we want to put it on, or is it always a collaboration?
No. Sometimes it's a collaboration, sometimes it's not. Dave Richardson, our keyboard player, arranger, most of the time, Dave already has a complete idea of his song, and he'll bring a completed demo. I mean, where he's recorded every part, he's written every part, he's written every lyric, and he knows exactly how he wants it.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time, those aren't really collaborations, but there are times when he'll come in and he'll go, Jerry, I've got this. For example, there's a song on there called Esta Noche, which is a beautiful ballad, but it's in Spanish, and he mm-hmm. always had that in mind for it to be like that
is
kind
that,
of a song.
It's night?
Yeah.
Esta noche. Spanish for two it is the noche.
For us gringas, yeah. for us the whitest
Jerry
girl on
tells,
the planet.
Jerry tells this joke in the show at the San Diego. That's Spanish or that's English for San Diego.
That's right.
No, I am seriously the whitest girl on the planet, so therefore I'm just trying to see
this
if my freshman year Spanish worked.
Your Spanish
so
good.
It's the night.
It means
okay.
tonight, yeah.
Oh, tonight. Okay.
Yeah. And so Dave brought that chord progression and kind of the thing and he gave it to me, and I came up with the hook and part of the melody. And then we got another friend of ours involved, Carlos David Perez, who was one of the singers with Ricky Martin when I did that tour.
You were the guitarist for
yeah.
Living La Vida Loca tour.
Yeah.
I mm-hmm. saw that tour.
And Carlos lives here, and he's a wonderful lyricist, and he's, you know, his Spanish is way better than mine. So we got him involved. So that's a collaboration. Most of my songs are collaborations. Some of the ones on this CD or not, but for example, Squeaky Wheel, which is a song that Nathan Tenoy wrote all the music and I wrote the lyrics on, and I did a collaboration, Let the Healing Begin. That was a collaboration with Doc Kupka from Tower of Power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very widely and, respected.
Yeah, he called me and he
also.
Said, "He said, Jerry, I understand your motto is 'Let the healing begin.' Man, I got a lyric." I said, "Okay, great. You know, send it to me." So that's how that happens. So a lot of times it's collaboration. You know.
So now, do you draw on a lot of things as a writer from your personal life?
Yeah.
So now, let the healing begin. You had some health issues. Is that something that had to?
Well, Let the Healing Begin. The our little motto thing. That started a long, long time ago. That started when the band started. We were, I don't remember exactly what happened, but I'd had a horrible day. And I got on stage. This was at the Palace Station. And
that mecca of healing.
Yeah. And got on stage. The band started playing. And after like two songs, it was like, it was all gone. It was just, all the pain was gone. You know what I mean? Whatever. And I said, you know what? Let the healing begin. And that just turned into this thing.
It's the healing now.
It's the healing now. I can tell
you.
It really is.
Yeah, sitting in that audience many, many, many times. At the end of the show, you always feel better than you did at the beginning of the show.
Yeah, that's
from our seats.
That's how I feel about it, too. Yeah. I always feel better.
Yeah, it's my babbling brook, I say, you know. It's where I go to, you know, chill out. And it's a weird feeling, a weird place to do it in the Lounge at the Palm. But there is that quality, yeah. It's rare that way.
Well, there's a lot of genuine, real emotions and things happening in that room all at the same time. We're really, really happy to be together on that stage. Mm-hmm. We're really excited about the music we're playing. And the audience is reacting to that and giving us back this energy. So there's this whole, it's like a dance we're doing. The energy in that room is what's healing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the collective energy.
The collective energy.
There are a lot of artists in the audience, too, as we've learned that around the room. Every time Santana's in town, it's like half his band's in the room. I mean,
we had some of the Earth, Wind & Fire guys there this Monday night. And we had Britney Spears' band in the house. So there's always that. There's the musicians and the entertainers, artists.
And people who know what happened here. You changed your nights at the Palms to Sundays for your own personal reasons. Mm-hmm. What happened with you health-wise and what we haven't really even talked about and I know you're not the guy that goes out and talks about this stuff much publicly, but and now you're back on Mondays. So when you moved back to Mondays, everybody thought Jerry's okay
What
was going on?
Well, what happened was that I was diagnosed with a early stage low-risk prostate cancer. And it was very early stage. There wasn't a lot of risk involved at the time that I was diagnosed with it, but it was there. And so I took a long time. I took like 6, 7, 8 months of really researching, and I talked to everybody on the planet that I could find that were real, that were experts at it, you know, that were doctors that treated it, patients who'd had all the different kind of treatments that there are. And at the same time, I saw holistic and naturalist doctors and kinesiologists, and I started dieting, and I figured I'm going to try to do whatever I can, my end, to heal myself. In the end, I decided, because the PSA levels were continuing to go up a little bit, I decided that I was going to treat it. And so I found that some people that I knew, oncologists and people that I knew up in the Bay Area they really cared about me. They really, really, honestly, truly
that helps.
Cared about my health. And they were going to look after me. And also they had some pretty new technology that they used to treat me with. But I had to be there for like 10 weeks, 5 days a week. So I was commuting. Mm. And so I had to be there Monday through Friday.
That's why the
So that's the long story of why we changed to Sundays.
Were you aware at that time of what was happening in Las Vegas in terms of your schedule? Because Santa Fe has always been a Monday thing to so many people.
Yeah.
That, when you switched to Sunday, it threw everybody off, including me. Their schedules, their mental schedules.
You know what? I do remember that you were like, oh, I'm going to hear Santa Fe. And I'm like, is it Monday? And they're like,
on Monday. Yeah. Completely thrown off. Yeah. Because it's such a part of people's schedules.
Yeah. It threw us all off. And
but wait, most important of everything else, how are you? You, first of all, you look 10 years younger.
Thank you.
I've never seen you look so healthy. And not that you looked unhealthy before, because that's always a misconception. People say that. But you look like you're running marathons. Seriously.
Well,
how is your health right now?
I'm really healthy. That whole thing of watching what I eat and taking care of myself and exercising, that wasn't lost on me. The whole idea that as I continue to age, that I need to do those things to really take care of myself, and I felt better. Secondly, the treatment was a complete success. I've experienced absolutely none of the side effects and after effects that you know, a lot of the guys that I talked to who had different procedures had experienced or that can happen. It was just a complete success. My PSA levels are, you know, way, way down, and it continues to do that over the next several years. But so, yeah, my health is great.
That's the most important thing, that you're doing great.
You know, we're back to Monday nights.
Now we know that, you know, Monday nights.
That's the barometer we use.
Now all is right in the world again in cats
right.
land.
We set everything back.
It wasn't just cats, but it was a way to tell how everything was going with you was the scheduling. You know, yeah. It was one of the barometers
we use. I'm good. And, you know, I haven't really been exactly anonymous about this whole thing with it. And I guess it's good that we talk about it here only because if there are guys out there who are wondering or who haven't had a checkup, and they really should, because this is the kind of thing that by the time you have a symptom, it might be too late.
Mm-hmm. So early detection
is the most important thing. And, you know, I'm pretty open about it. And I can, like I say, I read every book I could find. I talked to hundreds of people. And so, you know, any of my friends out there, they can always come to me and we can talk about
How
it.
How has it changed you in terms of... your music, in terms of writing, I mean, has it had that kind of it's sort of a life and death type of experience, or the fact that you are kind of become aware of your own mortality and you, I know from my own self with being diagnosed with illness, serious illness, that you don't leave without, in a lot of ways, changing for the better, but you kind of, it changes your perspective on things. It changes the way that you... Mm. You know, move forward with your life.
Oh, yeah.
How has that affected you in terms of your music?
Well, you know, it started with me several years ago as well. I lost my older brother like 2 years ago. And, you know, that made it real for me as well, you know. And it seems like, you know, I've lost a lot of friends recently in the musical community and just around me. I lost my little sister 2 weeks ago.
Sorry.
Yeah, and then this thing with the cancer. Well, I'm real, real aware that every day, that every moment that I'm here, that it's a gift. That nothing past that is promised to us, right? And so, I'm not a religious person, but I'm quite spiritual in terms of how I feel about myself and my family and people around me, and it has a definite effect on the music. It has a definite effect on my approach to writing, to how I feel about my playing, to the people that I surround myself to play with. You know, it's all very, mm-hmm. it's all very important to me.
I didn't know this about your sister. What happened?
Well, she had cirrhosis of the liver and...
Oh.
Yeah, you know, she'd been getting ill for a long time and so it was coming, you know, It wasn't unexpected, but, you know, it was sad.
Uh-huh. That's a tough way to go out. So on the topic of family, one of the longtime members of the act has been Lenny, your brother, great singer.
Yeah.
And he hasn't been on stage regularly in quite a while. And I think I was there the last night he performed.
Yeah.
When Trina Johnson Finn was involved in the show.
Right.
And are we going to see him back? What's his role in this,
Lenny,
in everything
Lenny
right now?
Lenny is the in and out kind of wild card. Always will be a member of Santa Fe and Santa Fe and the Fat
Vocalist
City
Emeritus, right?
That's right. Right now, he left a message a little while ago. Leonard, whenever there is fishing to be had,
yes.
Leonard's real passion.
Check his Facebook page, folks, for
Lenny's
some great
real
fishing
passion
posts.
Is fly fishing, and mm-hmm. he runs a fly fishing shop and a guide service up in Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And only two things in life he loves are singing and fly fishing. And so, when he's up there, he's in his glory.
Uh-huh.
And he just loves it. And in fact, I plan on taking my dad, who's 87 mm-hmm. years old or 85. Anyway, I'm going to take him up there in a couple of weeks. We're just kind of waiting for it to warm up a little bit more But there are so many different elements about fly fishing that are attractive to me. Okay, first of all, I never liked putting bait or worm on a hook. Okay, that's gross. I never liked killing a fish.
Mm-hmm.
I never liked yanking the hook. The whole thing was just barbaric to me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, fly fishing. First of all, the whole art of casting is a very graceful thing. And
that must be why I'm so bad.
but it can be learned very easily. But it's one of those things that you practice and you learn, and it's actually beautiful. And there's a lot of thinking involved in it. Secondly, there's the fly fishing. I love where fish live, in high mountain streams, okay? And I'm the kind, I don't really like so much lake fishing or ocean fishing. I like stream fishing because the scenery is constantly changing as I mm-hmm. walk upstream. Mm-hmm. I love the sound of the water and the birds and the trees. Then there are the other elements. There's entomology involved. There's understanding the hatch and the which insects are hatching at a particular time of the year, what they look like, and then trying to match that in what you present to the fish in a very natural way, because you're not going to fool a fish. They, you know.
You're on their home court.
You got to be really, exactly. Mm-hmm. And then there's, you know, we also tie our own flies. So that's an art,
an art
and a craft mm-hmm. in itself. So there are all these little things.
It's very serene.
It is, mm-hmm. But there are all these little things that I can generally tell who's what kind of a person will enjoy that kind of thing. You know, I'm kind of like, I get real focused. I get almost obsessive about things.
Yeah.
You know?
I want to ask, as we get to the close, Jerry, a lot of people who I respect in entertainment in Las Vegas and who've come into Las Vegas refer to Santa Fe, your band, and the Fat City Horns, the band you founded, is one of the best bands anywhere, one of the best bands in the West, an institution in Las Vegas. It doesn't get any better. Everybody I've brought to the show, everybody I've talked to who knows about this, you know, everyone from Clint Holmes to who you worked with for years at Harris have always said there's no better band. Now, how come Santa Fe and the Fat City Horns haven't gone on to a national acclaim and fame? What is the reason for that? You're good enough to have done it.
Yeah, well, there's 16 of us. There's 15 of us on stage and a front of house sound guy who's an integral part of our band, Sonny Maupin.
Mm-hmm.
And moving a band like that, just logistically, financially, is a difficult thing. We're playing the Salt Lake City Jazz Festival on July 12th. And right now I'm negotiating with the New Mexico State Fair to play their fair. There are certain ones that we go out and do, and we can do. In terms of getting national acclaim and fame, we're like an underground band. And most horn bands or people that listen to the kind of stuff that we play, which is pretty eclectic, they know about the band.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
we sell CDs and have fans in Japan and Korea and in, you know,
I met some people from Switzerland.
All over Scandinavia and mm-hmm. Mexico and everywhere. So the other thing is that all of the guys in the band are all working. You know, some of the guys work with Celine Dion. Some of them work with Jersey Boys. Some of them work, you know. Everybody is working or touring. Right now, our drummer Pepe is with Carlos Santana.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody is really busy in the business as it is. And so we're trying to, our dream is actually, my dream, okay, is to, at some point make this band my business. Whereby we could maybe go out and play, you know, two or three nights in Southern California, come back, then maybe go up north and play. You know, I don't want to be like my good friends Tower Power, you know, who someone, you know, lovingly referred to as the hobos of soul one time. Only because they're on the road so much.
Coming to a showroom near you is
right?
Power.
I mean, they're on the mm-hmm. road so much, and I love them.
Play the South Point.
Talk about an institution and yeah. an amazing band. Mm-hmm. But there's no way that I could. I have five kids, you know,
yeah.
and I have a wife and dogs and there's no way that I could leave for no amount of money or for no amount of fame, no amount of anything could take me away from that now. My priorities have completely changed, you know.
All right, Mr. Lopez. Well, it's great to see you back and healthy and tearing it up on stage.
Thanks
this new
me,
CD, which is out next week. The date is May 22nd officially. It's called The Answer. So thanks for coming down once more, Jerry.
Thank you, guys.
We'll see you Monday night.
All right.
Las Vegas. Viva! Viva! Las Vegas!